The adoption of sustainable technologies. It is one thing to develop new high-S technology, and quite another to have it adopted on a widespread basis and in a timely manner. The central challenge is to create incentives for firms and households to adopt environmentally sustainable technologies instead of the unsustainable technologies that they now deploy. In many contexts, a high-S technology exists but is more expensive than an environmentally damaging low-S technology. The extra cost of adopting the sustainable technology may be small relative to the large benefit to society of reducing the environmental harm, but the market prices don't send that signal, since the environmental harm is not reflected in market prices and therefore in the incentives facing businesses and households. In those cases, we say that the environmental harms are externalities, meaning that environmental costs are felt by society but are external to the narrow profit and loss calculations of individual businesses and the budget choices of individual households. Consider a classic example from recent decades. Atmospheric scientists and ecologists began to realize in the late 1960s that sulfur dioxide emitted from coal-burning power plants was mixing with rainfall to produce sulfuric acid. Forests downwind of these factories were being destroyed by the resulting acid rain. Smokestack scrubbers can remove the sulfur dioxide from the flue gas by mixing the gas with lime to produce calcium sulfate, thereby preventing the acid rain. The flue gas desulfurization represents an added cost for the factory, but a cost that is much less than the benefit of saving the forests. The problem is that in a free and unregulated market, each profit-maximizing power plant lacks the incentive to buy a scrubber. Despite the large social benefits, the firm itself would reduce its profits by investing in the scrubber. A public policy to correct the market prices is needed to give the power plants the incentive to buy the smokestack scrubbers. Four types of policies can be used to align private incentives and society's environmental interests. The simplest is a tax on the environmental harm, in this case a tax on sulfur emissions. In the economics jargon, this internalizes the externality. Assuming the tax per ton of sulfur emission is high enough, equal to the high social cost to the forests of an incremental ton of emissions, each factory will buy the scrubber in order to avoid the tax. A second mechanism, the one actually adopted by the U.S. government under the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act to fight acid rain, is the issuance of a limited number of permits for sulfur emissions. A company is allowed to emit a certain quantity of sulfur dioxides only if it owns the equivalent number of permits. The permit is tradable and therefore has a market price. If the market value of the permit is higher than the cost of adding a scrubber, and thereby avoiding the emission, the company sells its permit and buys a scrubber. The permit price thereby gave a market-type incentive equivalent to the emissions tax. A third mechanism is an industry performance standard, which in this case might require that all power plants as of a given future date must, by law, dramatically reduce sulfur dioxide emissions. This is the approach that Europe followed under its 1994 Sulfur Emissions Reduction Protocol. The protocol specifies that by 2004, all major combustion sources should reach specified emissions limits. The treaty also says that the parties may, in addition, apply economic instruments to encourage the adoption of cost-effective approaches to the reduction of sulfur emissions. A fourth mechanism is zoning, according to which any of these environmental measures, taxes, tradable permits, or performance standards, is applied in certain spatial zones but not in others. The zoning is designed to allow plants to emit more gases where the effects on populations or ecosystems are likely to be small, and to limit the emissions where the damages are likely to be large. The zoning will be designed, for example, to steer polluting industries away from densely populated areas or from especially vulnerable ecosystems. Zoning, or some kind of spatially based policy, is crucial when the social costs of environmental impacts depend strongly on where those impacts occur. In that case, intuitively, the social costs that need to be internalized cannot be captured by a single tax rate, or a single price of a tradable permit, or a single industrial standard. A pollutant such as sulfur dioxide is an obvious case where private interests and social interests diverge unless market forces are corrected by public policy. Yet there are many other circumstances, some very subtle, where private interests and society's environmental interests are likely to diverge, and thereby to require some corrections to the market forces. The most important of these today, without doubt, is the emission of carbon dioxide by fossil fuel users. Carbon dioxide is the most important greenhouse gas now changing the Earth's climate system. It is not a typical pollutant, because carbon dioxide is harmless, odorless, and doesn't bother anybody except for the fact that it could devastate the planet in coming decades. It requires a market correction, just like sulfur dioxide. Yet the manner for making that correction is much more complex, given the global scale of the problem and the extent to which fossil fuel use is at the core of the modern economy. The challenge is discussed in Chapter 4.